Hello, I'm Kevin Keith. In this episode of Skeptical Ethics, we'll revisit the topic of gender essentialism, introduced in the segment Gender and Essence from Episode 4 of Skeptical Connections. This time, we'll see that even adopting a specific position on the contentious issues raised by that topic can lead to surprising disagreements and controversies. Before we start, let me remind listeners that the Skeptical Ethics series attempts to apply skeptical reasoning to value-based issues such as moral or cultural controversies. New listeners, or those who want to review the basic conceptual grounding of that enterprise, may wish to download the first Skeptical Ethics segment, Does Skepticism Lead to Agreement?, which appeared in Episode 2 of the Skeptical Connections podcast, and the second segment, Moral Agreement Among Skeptics, from Episode 3 of Skeptical Connections, for useful background. In the previous segment, we saw that the traditional view of biological sex and social gender as binary, everyone is just one or the other sex and one or the other gender, and the two are linked, can be challenged on scientific grounds. There are many exceptions and different possible combinations of sex and gender characteristics. For purposes of this discussion, let's adopt the revisionist scientific perspective on traditional sex and gender stereotypes, namely, that sex and gender binaries are false, that intersex anatomy is not pathological but a valid biological categorization, that sexual identity, in the sense of sexual attraction, is not categorically linked to genetic or biological sex and also falls along a spectrum, that is, that homosexuality, bisexuality, and other forms of sexual identity are real and normal within the human species, that anatomical sex can be changed by surgery and other treatments, and that gender is performative in the sense that people can choose to adopt or reject stereotypically gendered behaviors regardless of their genetic or anatomical sex or sexual identity. For more details on these issues, you may wish to review the previous segment, Gender and Essence. This perspective has some straightforward factual implications. For instance, consider homosexuality. If sexual identity is not rigidly linked to biological sex, then homosexual attraction is not surprising, and there are no grounds for regarding it as scientifically abnormal. Now consider transsexualism. If genetic sex is not rigidly linked to anatomical sex, as we saw in the previous segment that it sometimes is not, then there is nothing surprising about using medical treatments to alter or change one's anatomical sex, and therefore one's social categorization as being one sex or another. Now consider the concept of intersex. We saw in the previous segment that a certain percentage of individuals are born with their reproductive organs and external genitalia differing, to one degree or another, from the binary sex morphology typical of their genetic sex. Individuals may have female-appearing or male-appearing genitalia, or genitalia with a mix of characteristics between one or the other extreme, in combination with one or the other type of gonadal tissue, all unrelated to their underlying genetic makeup. It is difficult to unambiguously categorize such individuals within the traditional sex binary. Thus, we have three examples of conditions or categorizations that do not conform to the traditional sex and gender binary stereotype. And, as I'm sure we all know, the recognition and social acceptance of each of these three categories of persons, people who are homosexual, transsexual, or intersex, is a political value particularly associated with one side of the political spectrum. I'll just call this liberal, though it may be characteristic of many different political perspectives. The purpose of this segment of Skeptical Ethics is not to argue for liberal positions, but instead to reveal how surprisingly complicated political and social policy can be, even if the relevant scientific grounding is taken as given and viewed from a particular political perspective. That is, it seems natural to assume that those who take the liberal view on one of these issues would do so on the rest, but adopting one or more of these views may bring with it surprisingly complicated baggage. What does it mean to be transsexual? In the most extreme sense, it means that one has changed one's sex. That seems simple enough, but in order to change one's sex, that is, to go from one sex to the other, there must be a sex to start from and a sex to change to. In other words, the sex binary stereotype must be true. But this violates the revisionist perspective we had previously asserted, and may at least implicitly undermine the liberal position regarding the other categories previously mentioned. On the other hand, sex transitioning may be revisionist after all. Today, there are many more options for transitioning than just the classic so-called sex change. Transsexual procedures involve a lengthy combination of hormonal and surgical procedures addressing both primary and secondary sex characteristics. Many transsexual persons choose some combination of these treatments, but not all, and may settle on any of a wide range of anatomical characteristics that do not necessarily conform to a stereotypical binary sex morphology. There are people who identify and present themselves as women who have a functional penis and testicles and no intention of changing that. There are those who present themselves as men who have functional female reproductive organs and in fact have born children while living as male with a traditionally male outward appearance. Also, it's commonly accepted as a matter of politics and etiquette among transsexual persons that each individual should be accorded the right to claim their own sex categorization, to have it recognized on official documentation, and to be recognized and addressed in those terms. These perspectives imply that being male or female does not require having a particular set of sex organs or reproductive role. There are, in fact, disputes within the transsexual community between those who feel they have undergone a true and complete change of sex and those who feel that sex categories are passé and that transsexualism merely means choosing a place along a spectrum. There are also controversies regarding those who model a stereotypically male or female persona after undergoing a transsexual procedure as a way of reinforcing their new identity. Some gender activists feel that acting male or acting female as part of a new transsexual identity merely reinforces gender stereotypes which are confining for those who do not have the luxury of treating them as optional. And some activists who strongly support women's rights and gay rights do not regard anatomically transitioned individuals as being truly male or female, and truly gay or straight in their post-transition identities. Many transsexual women complain of hostility from non-transsexual lesbians, stemming from a view that being a surgically assigned woman is not the same as being biologically a woman, and that it ignores the social and political realities that those born as women grow up with. On the other hand, some trans women have argued that the categories of woman and man are inherently artificial. They use the terms female assigned at birth or male assigned at birth to denote those who are not transsexual, to indicate that female and male are arbitrary categories no matter how they're accessed. Thus, for those who are supportive of transsexualism in a general sense, it's essentially impossible to endorse any distinct view of sex and gender that does not meet with criticism even from others who share the same general political perspective. What about homosexuality? It's traditionally defined as being sexually attracted to members of one's own sex. Perhaps you can see the problem here. For there to be such things as heterosexuality and homosexuality, defined by attraction to the same or the other sex, there must again be two and only two sexes. Thus, the typically liberal position of acceptance of homosexuality implies also accepting the somewhat reactionary perspective of binary sexual identity. And what, again, about transsexual people? Changing one's anatomical sex does not typically involve changing one's feelings of sexual attraction. A heterosexual man who transitions to female sexual anatomy usually remains attracted to women, but will then identify as a lesbian, and similarly for other kinds of transitions. But this implies that sexual identity can be switched along with sexual anatomy. Some activists complain that this is, even if unintentionally, a mockery of inborn sexual identity as experienced and lived by most people, and especially that it ignores or dismisses the difficult issues of discrimination and self-assertion faced by those who identify as homosexual without having chosen that status as optional. The existence of intersex persons complicates all of these considerations. If intersex is a valid biological categorization, then anatomical sex must be regarded as an almost seamless spectrum, even if most people fall strongly toward one or the other end of that spectrum. To make that assertion cuts strongly against any perspective that relies upon or endorses binary sex, including, again, the notion of sex change, and possibly certain conceptions of sexual identity. For instance, how can you be attracted to the other sex if there are no distinct sexes? But on the other hand, to deny the reality of intersex defines an entire group of people who may be well satisfied with their anatomy and sexual function as pathological, regardless of whether they agree. As skeptics, we want to rely upon reasonable interpretations of valid science to understand the world, including human beings as part of the world, and to use that understanding to inform our political perspectives as well. As rational persons and citizens of our countries, no doubt we all want to see the best and most humane policies adopted, particularly where we think we can see clearly to best solutions founded on empirical truth and right reason. In the case of the issues discussed in this segment, it's easy to agree that the scientific facts regarding the traditional understanding of binary sex and gender and sexual identity are questionable, but that leads us to the perception of a spectrum, rather than clear and distinct exclusive categories in those areas and related ones. For liberal gender activists, this may require abandoning hard-fought political positions that implicitly endorse the sex binary perspective, or, alternatively, accepting that rigid views of sex and gender are part of progressive positions that historically arose from a rejection of those views. In this way, revision of traditional scientific views may also require revision of that revision. I invite your comments and questions on this issue. Please feel free to contact me through skepticalconnections.com. And I hope you'll join me next week as we tackle an issue that, surprisingly, isn't gender. Thanks for listening.